in Gaza have lost one or both of their legs since Israel began its assault on October. Can you talk about the amputation crisis in this last minute we have, speaking to us from Paris?
Normally, as we are in Gaza Strip, like 2,300,000 persons in Gaza Strip. So we talk about more than 120,000 people with disability. And in the last war and in the last genocide, what happened now in Gaza Strip, we talk about more than 10,000 new people with disability in the last genocide. Children, women and men, and they have like an amputee and paraplegic. So it's like a very hard situation because there is, as I told before, there is no difference between any, if you are children or women. So everyone is a target. What I want to explain for you is like, in the same time, it's a very hard situation. And also, as example, we are as a people with disability in our sport. So we are training before this genocide as a in our sport.
Fadi, we're going to have to wrap up the conversation now, but we're going to continue. Fadi Deeb represents Palestine as a shot putter in the 2024 Paralympics, which begin later this month. The only member of the Palestinian Olympic delegation from Gaza. And I want to thank Ashrin Ahmed and Dave Zirin. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find that survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024.
Show your support for KBOO today by becoming a member. Just text KBOO to the phone number 44321 and join the thousands of members who make volunteer-powered radio possible.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, dozens of southern Oregonians are under evacuation orders because of the Dixon fire.
Grants Pass enacts a new camping ban post-Supreme Court case.
And all Portland public school students will get free breakfast and lunch this school year.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 12th, 2024. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. Dozens of people are under an evacuation order in southern Oregon due to a rapidly growing wildfire. The Dixon Fire, formerly known as the Tiller Trail Fire, is burning in Douglas County, around 30 miles southeast of Roseburg. It is currently over 1,300 acres in size and 0% contained. Firefighters on the Dixon Fire worked through last night to extend control lines around the fire perimeter. However, the combination of erratic wind and dry fuels has produced very active fire behavior, making containment difficult. This led Governor Tina Kotek to invoke the Emergency Conflagration Act for the fire, allowing the state fire marshal to mobilize state resources to assist local firefighters. More than 30 residents along Croom Ranch Lane and Devil's Knob Road are under a Level 3 Go Now evacuation order, with Level 1 and 2 notices in place for areas further east of the fire. In addition to the Dixon Fire, the Crazy Creek Fire is blazing around 16 miles north of Paulina. It began July 22nd due to lightning and has burned over 80,000 acres. It is currently 60% contained, with crews making significant progress to fortify the fire's containment lines to the south, west, and north yesterday. Evacuation orders were extended this past weekend to include the forest boundary to Highway 380. This summer, almost 1.5 million acres of land throughout Oregon has burned in wildfires.
The Grants Pass City Council voted to ban camping on public property. In a unanimous 7-0 vote, the council decided to enforce outdoor sleeping bans and create 4 sites across the city where homeless people can go. It's the city's first change to its anti-camping laws since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that outdoor sleeping bans don't violate the 8th Amendment. That was back in June. The laws create 4 so-called allowable locations where homeless people can set up their tents, with a fine up to $50 for camping on public property anywhere else. The city plans to provide toilets, hand-washing stations, and dumpsters at the sites, but they will not be staffed. One designated campsite will allow people to stay up to 4 days, with the other 3 only allowing 1 day. However, because state law requires officials to give a 72-hour notice before removing people's belongings, people will effectively be able to stay up to a week at the sites allowing 4-day stays, and roughly 4 days at the others. Grants Pass Mayor Sarah Bristol said that the new laws are meant to move people out of the parks while still giving them places to sleep. However, she admitted that the solution is temporary. She said, quote, "This plan isn't the best in terms of providing great services, or fixing homelessness, or really helping people get out of poverty, or deal with addiction or mental health issues, or anything like that. They're very much a temporary stopgap solution. But I would say it's the beginning, but it's not the end of our actions," end quote. This ban comes at a time when homelessness in the United States grew 12% last year, largely due to soaring rent prices and a decline in COVID-19 pandemic assistance.
All Portland public school students will be able to get free breakfast and lunch for the 2024-2025 school year. Families don't need to submit a free and reduced price meal application in order to qualify. All students can get free breakfast and lunch. They're automatically enrolled. This is partly thanks to an expansion in federal eligibility and money from the state's Student Success Act. Breakfast includes an entree, a choice of fruit, and milk. Lunch is an entree, milk, and unlimited fruits and vegetables. Students have to pick at least 3. That does mean that kitchen staff at Portland Public Schools won't take cash or check anymore. Students who want to just purchase a milk will also need to grab 2 other foods, like a fruit and vegetable, but it will be at no charge. Whitney Ellersick is Senior Director of Nutrition Services for Portland Public Schools. Ellersick said, in quote, "Access to nutritious meals is a crucial component of student success and well-being, and we are thrilled to be able to take advantage of this opportunity on behalf of our students," end quote.
The backers of Measure 118 say they can more than double the tax rebate they're promising to Oregonians. The original pitch was a $750 rebate to all Oregonians, regardless of need. They now say the tax rebate will be $1,600. Measure 118 raises the corporate minimum tax to 3% on sales from companies with more than $25 million in revenue. When Measure 118's campaign first started in 2018, supporters expected it would raise $3 billion a year. A new state analysis of Measure 118 predicts the tax increase will likely generate between $12 billion and $13.6 billion in the 2025 to 2027 budget cycle. That money will be distributed among anyone who has lived in Oregon for more than 200 days, which qualifies nearly all of Oregon's 4.24 million residents. The measure has drawn the opposition of business interests, most significantly Oregon business and industry. But it's not just those facing tax hikes who've criticized the measure. Tax Fairness Oregon is a watchdog group that has in the past supported raising taxes on Oregon corporations. They oppose the measure on several grounds, calling it, quote, "poorly drafted and fatally flawed." They criticize the decision to provide rebates to even the richest Oregonians. They also say the measure is inflationary, burdens low-margin businesses unfairly, and discourages business investment in Oregon. The measure's chief petitioner, Antonio Gisbert, disagrees, saying the measure would mostly target large out-of-state corporations. Gisbert says the rebate would also stimulate personal income tax revenue. The tax rebate has endorsements from the United Auto Workers, Teamsters Local 206, as well as Pacific Green and the Oregon Progressive Parties.
A measure on the ballot in November would create an independent commission that would set pay for Oregon's elected officials. Currently, this is the job of state lawmakers. KBOO's Zachary Jones-Nure has the details.
Oregon voters will consider a ballot measure that would establish an independent commission for setting the pay of elected officials. If passed in November, Measure 116 would set up the Independent Public Service Compensation Commission to decide salaries for elected officials, including the governor, state lawmakers, judges, and district attorneys. Robin Yee is with the organization East County Rising, which is supporting the measure.
It's about fairness and accountability and transparency in our government, which I think will add faith to our government. It's a common sense solution to give power back to Oregonians and to protect our democracy.
22 states have independent compensation commissions, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. If it's approved, the commission would set pay rates every 2 years. Officers or employees of the state and registered lobbyists cannot be part of the commission. The campaign supporting Measure 116 includes a wide array of organizations, including the Latino Network Action Fund, Oregon League of Conservation Voters, and Oregon Nurses Association. The measure was referred to the ballot by the legislature in 2023, and Yee says it has broad support.
A majority of Oregonians and overwhelmingly bipartisan vote of legislators understand that the current system doesn't make sense and it isn't fair and it is a problem, and it's up to Oregonians to decide what's the right fit for Oregon.
Oregon established an independent pay commission in 1983, but it went defunct in 2000. The commission was reestablished in 2007, saw its funding cut in 2008, and was eliminated again in 2017. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Zachary Jones-Nure.
The Inflation Reduction Act aims to help states in the transition to clean energy and also communities most impacted by climate change. But some states have struggled to identify where funds should go. Eric Tagedoff reports.
The Inflation Reduction Act was signed into law 2 years ago this week. One expert says states should ensure funds from it are going to communities most affected by climate change. The law passed by Congress aimed to bolster clean energy. It also provides funds for climate resilience among communities on the front lines and with the fewest resources to adapt to the changing environment. Rachel Jacobson with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says some states have struggled to define who these communities are, but Washington State's Healthy Environment for All, or HEAL Act, is an example of the opposite.
The HEAL Act is a great example for other states to learn from as they are either creating or bolstering frameworks that are going to set the stage for them to justly and equitably distribute federal climate resources.
Jacobson says Washington state lawmakers were able to work with communities affected by climate change to pass this inclusive law in 2021. The HEAL Act ensures that Washington state agencies are addressing environmental justice issues with their policies to eliminate disparities for communities of color and low-income households. On the other end, Jacobson says some states have struggled to make use of the funds from the Inflation Reduction Act.
The Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act require expertise, staff capacity, time, and resources. And not all states have raised the revenues or allocated the money that's necessary to be able to bring in these funds.
Jacobson says this is important not just for the present, but the future. She says states should use these funds for an equitable transition to clean energy in the long term. Planning will be especially crucial as the climate has an increasing impact on projects, such as in infrastructure. The Inflation Reduction Act was signed into law on August 16, 2022. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
President Biden says a Gaza ceasefire deal is still possible. A New Hampshire Democrat says abortion will be a big election motivator despite GOP arguments, and Mississippi groups work on black voter turnout. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The plan I put together, endorsed by the G7, endorsed by the UN Security Council, et cetera, is still viable.
President Joe Biden insists a Gaza ceasefire deal is still feasible, but there's a risk of a wider regional war. Hamas said Sunday it won't attend peace negotiations this week. A targeted Israeli strike killed a more moderate Hamas leader who was replaced by a hardliner, putting solidly pro-war figures in charge on both sides. The Republican VP nominee, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, says he wants to more than double the child tax credit to $5,000. That's in line with his support for larger and more traditional families. Vance, taking a prominent role in the campaign, made the rounds of the Sunday politics shows.
Child tax credit has languished thanks to the Biden administration. Chuck Schumer's been unable to get it through the United States Senate, and we want to have a more pro-family policy.
Democrats call Vance's support for families insincere. Despite bipartisan support in the House, an expanded child credit failed in the Senate while Vance was absent. Vice President Kamala Harris and her VP pick, Tim Walz, campaigned in Nevada over the weekend. She acknowledged that beating former President Donald Trump won't be easy, but warned personal freedoms and democracy are at stake.
Across our nation, we have been witnessing a full-on assault on hard-won, hard-fought freedoms and fundamental rights.
Harris was joined there by the former Washington State Republican Party chair. Chris Vance is adding his name to the growing list of Republicans endorsing the Democrat. He cites national security and protecting democracy.
I'm here in Nevada for a Kamala Harris rally because Republicans who have principles and honor and are willing to put the country before party need to support Kamala Harris.
In a state where much of the Democratic strength comes from hospitality unions, Harris signed onto a Trump promise to end taxes on tips, making that a plank for both parties. Trump says he thinks abortion will be a very small issue for voters this November. 2 years after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, efforts to restrict it in New Hampshire have so far failed. Former state Democratic Party chair Kathleen Sullivan is convinced voters there won't forget.
It's an issue in our governor's race, an issue in our legislative races, and so it's going to continue to be a major issue here in New Hampshire and I think across the country.
2 years ago, only a third of Mississippi's voting age population cast a ballot. Groups are working to boost black turnout. Sandra Welchlin is with the Mississippi Black Women's Roundtable and points to their Power of the Sister Vote boot camp.
Inside these boot camps, we are training folks, giving them data. Let's develop strategies on targeting and reaching those infrequent or high opportunity voters.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is cloudy with a low of 65. Tomorrow's weather is cloudy with a high of 71. Today in history, in 1877, Thomas Edison invented the phonograph. The invention was developed as a result of his work on the telegraph and telephone. It forever changed how people listened to music, allowing them for the first time to listen to songs as many times as they wanted, where, and when they wanted. It was instrumental in the development of jazz. The quote of the day is from Edison, who said, quote, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work."
Indian boarding school survivors and advocates say a federal report on the abusive assimilation effort is a welcome start for healing the trauma they endured. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new federal Indian boarding school report found nearly 1,000 children died while attending the schools created to strip them of their culture. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
The report identified nearly 19,000 children who attended a boarding school between 1819 and 1969. But the government acknowledges there were more. At the schools, teachers were known to do everything from cutting students' hair to beating them for speaking their native languages. This investigation, led by the Interior Department, found marked and unmarked graves at 65 different school sites. The agency says it's working with tribes that want remains repatriated. Stacy Larvey is Ponca and a member of a National Tribal Historic Preservation Group. She urges the government to focus on
coming up with solutions and ways to heal the trauma. And one part of apologizing or acknowledging would be future investments into tribal nations.
In fact, the report recommends the U.S. provides funding for culturally based programs centered on intergenerational trauma, violence prevention, and revitalizing Native languages.
For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Research from the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition shows that by the 1920s, there were more than 60,000 children in the schools. The Federal Communications Commission voted this week to establish a new alert code for missing and endangered people by delivering messages to the public over TV, radio, and wireless phones. The alert code will help law enforcement agencies draw public attention to missing people of all ages who do not qualify for Amber Alerts. According to the FCC, the decision will support efforts to raise public awareness of missing Indigenous people. The Southern Ute Mountain Ute and Ute tribes recently gathered for their annual friendly sports competition for young people. Clark Adamitis has more.
At the Ignacio High School Gymnasium, young people from three tribes are playing volleyball against each other at the annual Tri-Ute Games. This year, the Southern Ute Tribe is hosting its sister tribes, the Ute Mountain Ute and Ute Indian tribes, in Ignacio, Colorado. Other sports taking place throughout the three-day gathering include archery, skateboarding, and hand games. Kaya Whiteskunk is the recreation director for the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. She says that the three sister tribes gathering for this annual event shows unity.
Maybe we have relatives from the other tribes that we don't get to see, but this is a time that it helps the youth get to know each other.
Over at the Southern Ute Bear Dance Trail, athletes in colored shirts are running the Ute Warrior Challenge.
We're almost there. Good job, guys. Good job.
Darnell Muniz is a recreation specialist at the Sun Ute Community Center. He's guiding kids running along the road after they just slid through a slip and slide.
The challenge is having them running about half a mile on our Bear Dance Trail. And then there at the park, we have various events, like army crawl, slip and slide.
Eunice says that this year's Tri-Ute Games was the first one since the COVID-19 pandemic with all three tribes. In 2022, the games only included two of the three sister tribes.
They still had the temperature checks and also mask mandate still. So at that time, there wasn't that many participants.
This year, the Southern Ute and Ute Indian tribes opened up youth registration to second descendants of tribal members. Over 300 youth athletes participated this year. Next year's Tri-Ute Games will likely be hosted by the Ute Indian tribe in Fort Duchesne, Utah. I'm Clark Adamitis.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Portland Housing Bureau approves a new affordable housing complex in Northwest. They hope it will be open for Portlanders to rent by the summer of 2028. KBOO's Grant Button has more.
Last Thursday, the Portland Housing Bureau, or PHB, awarded up to $42 million to develop 230 affordable rental homes within the Broadway corridor. The Broadway Corridor is a 34-acre site overseen by Prosper Portland at the site of the former Central Post Office between Old Town and the Pearl District. The project plans to provide homes for over 400 Portlanders in need, alongside services accessible both to residents and the local community. The project is a joint venture between Home Forward and the Urban League of Portland to develop the homes, with an expected completion date in the summer of 2028. The new apartments will range from studios to three bedrooms, with 62 of the units sized for families and larger households. 50 units of varying sizes will be regulated affordable at 30% of the area median income. The remaining 80 units will be regulated at 60% area median income. On the ground floor, the Urban League will operate a nearly 3,000 square foot affordable early learning center, which will be open to both building residents and the surrounding community. The project will also include a community room, playground, courtyard, and much more. Helmi A. Hisserich is director of the Housing Bureau. He said, quote, "Our community review committee was extremely impressed by the thoughtful, elegant design, the integrated on-site services, and the dedication to dignified, well-constructed, affordable homes shown by the Home Forward and Urban League proposal. We are proud to support this transformative development, which will root the new Broadway Corridor neighborhood in a commitment to service and support for low-income Portlanders for decades to come," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
This past Sunday marked the 28th annual Providence Bridge Pedal, one of the largest community bike events in the country. According to officials, nearly 10,000 cyclists took to the roads on and over Portland's bridges early in the morning. The pedal featured four different routes, from a kid's route spanning 3 miles to the Fremont Express route totaling 23 miles. Some routes began at 7 a.m. and the event was over by 12:30 p.m. Traffic was affected on the Hawthorne, Morrison, and Selwood bridges as the pedal aimed to provide, quote, "magnificent views from the car-free upper decks of the Marquam and Fremont bridges." Participants praised the near-perfect weather and sweet treats awaiting them at the finish line. The event benefited Providence Community Teaching Kitchen and Garden at Providence Milwaukee Hospital. The kitchen teaches people how to prepare healthy but affordable meals, and the garden provides thousands of pounds of produce for people in need.
Undocumented immigrants in the U.S. pay nearly $100 billion in taxes annually. That's according to a new report. The Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy found undocumented migrants pay more than $96 billion in federal, state, and local taxes in 2022, with Oregon seeing more than $353 million of tax revenue. Report co-author Carl Davis says narratives around how migrants are impacting the nation don't always stand up to scrutiny.
I think we're able to dispel a lot of myths around this one-sided idea that undocumented immigrants are claiming benefits and not paying any taxes. It's really not tethered to reality.
Some undocumented workers are being paid under the table. But the study found if migrants had access to legal status, such as a guest worker program, states and localities would see an additional $7 billion in tax revenue annually, while adding another $33 billion in federal revenue. The report found more than a third of the total taxes paid by undocumented workers goes towards payroll taxes such as Medicare, Social Security, and unemployment insurance, programs these same workers are unable to access. With presidential campaign rhetoric often focused on the topic of immigration, Davis says big policy changes could impact the economy.
If we're going to dramatically change course on immigration policy, say through ramping up deportations, for example, that's really going to shrink the size of the labor force at a time when a lot of industries are already struggling to fill the positions they have available.
Some undocumented immigrants own homes, but most rent. The report found immigrants were paying over $10 billion in property taxes, either directly or indirectly via payments to landlords. The study shows that most undocumented adults have lived in the U.S. for 16 years or more.
By and large, these are people who are trying to put down roots and are trying to have a better life for themselves and for their family. And these are folks who have been here for quite a while and who are really contributing to the economy and to our funding of our public services in significant ways.
That was tax researcher Carl Davis.
Agriculture advocates are pushing for more transparency on the USDA's recently announced payments for minority farmers, ranchers, and foresters who experience discrimination. More than $2 billion is going to tens of thousands of recipients, but some are hoping for more information about payout demographics, methodology, and reviewers. Milwaukee has more on the story.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is doling out direct payments to minority ag producers that the government had previously discriminated against, but some advocates are hoping for more transparency about selection criteria and other information. More than $2 billion are going to tens of thousands of farmers, ranchers, and foresters, with 129 awards going to Missouri. The USDA has had a long history of discriminatory practices, including denying loans to black and other minority farmers at greater rates than their white counterparts. Sharon Mallory with the 2020 Farmers Co-op says these payments are great, but the program could be improved.
I'm not personally dazzled about numbers or dollar amounts unless I can connect that to the people that are being most impacted, which is our black and small scale farmers.
She wants the USDA to disclose its methodology for choosing applicants for these payments, plus more info about who reviewed the grants and the racial demographics and farm sizes of the payouts. The range of awards is large, between a few $1,000s and $500,000, with the average being about $82,000. The money was authorized through the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act, and the majority of the recipients are from the Deep South. Mallory says agriculture has been consolidating in recent decades, and smaller minority farmers have often been forced out of business. She's pushing for the USDA's program to improve in part because of this history.
You can be like an ostrich and put your head in a hole. You can put your blindfolds on. You can turn your head the other way. But the fact of the matter is, it did happen. It's documented. It's not a secret, so let's address it.
One study found that black American farmers lost more than $300 billion worth of land in the 20th century, in part due to the USDA's discriminatory practices. I'm Will Waukee, Missouri News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 12th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button, Zachary Jones-Nuray, and Reed Johnson. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Will Waukee, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our lovely members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.